together in the Word of God in the sequence of our present series on Sunday mornings in the New Testament and the Gospel according to St. John at chapter 11. We have read and studied six of the miracles or the significant signs or wonders that Jesus accomplished, and we come now to the seventh. It's a long story, but it's a complete story. And we read practically the whole of chapter 11. John chapter 11 at verse 1. Now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. It was that Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was ill. So the sisters sent to Jesus, saying, "Lord, he whom you love is ill." But when Jesus heard it, he said, "This illness is not unto death. It is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified by means of it." Now, Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that he was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Then after this he said to the disciples, "Let us go into Judea again." The disciples said to him, "Rabbi, Master, the Jews were but now seeking to stone you, and are you going there again?" Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours in the day? If anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble, because he sees the light of this world. But if anyone walks in the night, he stumbles, because the light is not on him." Thus he spoke, really saying to his disciples, the time that I have cannot be lengthened by precautions, nor can it be shortened by the oppositions of mere men. Thus he spoke, verse 11, and then he said to them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I go to awake him out of sleep." The disciples said to him, "Lord, if he has fallen asleep, he will recover, he'll waken up." Now Jesus had spoken of his death, but they thought that he meant taking rest in sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead. And for your sake, I am glad that I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him." Thomas, called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, "Let us also go, and we'll all die together with him." Now, when Jesus came, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles off, and many of the Jews had come to Martha and Mary to console them concerning their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him while Mary sat in the house. And Martha said to Jesus, rather rebuking him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. And even now I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha said to him, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." Jesus said to her, Don't postpone the blessing. I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this?" She said to him, Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, he who is coming into the world." When she had said this, she went and called her sister Mary, saying quietly, "The teacher, the master is here and is calling for you." And when Mary heard it, she rose quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet come to the village, but was still in the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who were with her saw in the house consoling her, saw Mary rise quickly and go out, they followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb to weep there. Then Mary, when she came where Jesus was and saw him, fell at his feet, saying to him, the same as her sister said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled, and he said, where have you laid him? They said to him, Lord, come and see. And Jesus wept. So the Jews said, see how he loved him. But some of them said, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying? Then Jesus, deeply moved again, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone lay upon it. And Jesus said, take away the stone. And Martha, the very practically minded sister of the dead man, said to him, Lord, by this time there will be a smell, for he has been dead 4 days. Jesus said to her, did I not tell you that if you would believe, you would see the glory of God? So they took away the stone. And Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank thee that thou hast heard me. I knew that thou hearest me always, but I have said this on account of the people standing by, that they may believe that thou didst send me. When he had said this, he cried with a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. And the dead man came out from the grave, his hands and his feet bound with bandages and his face wrapped with a cloth. And Jesus said to them, unbind him and let him go. Many of the Jews, therefore, who had come with Mary and had seen what he did, believed in Jesus. But some of them went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done. So the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered the council and said, what are we to do? For this man performs many signs. If we let him go on thus, everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come and destroy both our holy place and our nation. Verse 53. So, from that day on, they took counsel how to put Jesus to death. Amen, and may God bless to our hearts such a reading of his word. Anyone who has ever stood at the graveside of a very dearly loved one must thrill to that last verse of the hymn describing Jesus as the vanquisher of death. And it is because he is so, and demonstrated to be so, here in this story of the raising of Lazarus, that we are able now and always to say, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, because thou art with me, and that thou is the vanquisher of death. I direct your attention to the story of the raising of Lazarus in John chapter 11. And I must confess that there is so much truth and so much drama in this story that it is very difficult to know where to start, and I suppose I'm a bit reluctant even to try to deal with this story in one sermon. We analyze the story and make it into a parable or an illustration of the gospel and the preaching of the gospel in terms of what Jesus is recorded as saying in another part of John's gospel, the day will come when the dead shall hear the voice of the Son of God, and they that hear shall live. And if the Bible is true when it speaks of us as being dead in trespasses and sins, then the whole concept of preaching the gospel is really quite an astonishing one. You're preaching to those who are dead in sin, and you're expecting them to hear. But then, of course, we sing sometimes in that marvelous hymn, revive thy work, O Lord, thy mighty arm make bare. Speak with the voice that wakes the dead, and make thy people hear. But we cannot deal with this story rightly by spiritualizing it like that. We must deal with it in more exact and more literal terms. And we must remember in reading this and studying this story what we have tried to emphasize in the previous six studies in this series. As John says away at the end of his Gospel in chapter 20 at verse 30, Jesus did many other signs in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book, but these, including the story of the raising of Lazarus, these are written that you may believe. That is, these are written so that you may learn to believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in his name. And so this story has as its supreme objective the lesson that we should learn to trust Jesus. And it is very important in studying this to focus on the person of Jesus and the power of Jesus. If I have done my sums correctly, I think the actual name Jesus occurs no less than 20 times in this story. Jesus, Jesus. In a sense, you could say, well, what's this story all about? It's all about Jesus. And 20 times the story says, this is all about Jesus. Of course, as well as the 20 times of the name of Jesus, you've got the word Lord a number of times, and he and him a number of times. So in a sense, this story is really a throb. Jesus, 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 Jesus. Look at Jesus, see who he is, see what he can do, and make it your business to put your trust in him. That's what the sermon's all about. Jesus, his person and his power, and the glorious statement that he made to Martha in verses 25 and 26, I am here and now, I always have been and I always will be, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? Well, I for one say yes. The details of the story, and I tried to read it with some real meaning earlier in the service, the details of the story clearly indicate that this is a narrative given to us by an eyewitness. Someone who was actually there. And quite apart from the miracle, which shows the authority and the power of Jesus Christ over death, we see Jesus dealing with the disciples. I wonder what Jesus' reaction was when Thomas said, oh, well, let's all go with him. We'll all die together. What a depressing thing to say. It's like, I suppose, every congregation has got somebody like this. They're always, oh, it won't work. It's bound to fail. You'll never do it. Well, Jesus said that. The disciples, you see, weren't believing. And I say, quite apart from the miracle of the raising of Lazarus, we see Jesus dealing with his disciples and dealing with Martha and Mary and dealing with others to lead them to true faith. Of course, the very last verse of our reading indicated that the whole incident led some people to the very opposite extreme. They heard what Jesus said, they heard what Jesus had done, they heard about who he was, and they decided from that day on they were going to plan his death. Little wonder Jesus wept. Are there not people here, friends, married couples, all the rest of it, who at times have wept and said to their loved one, "Do you not trust me?" Well, that was the heartbreak of Jesus in this story. They wouldn't trust him. They wouldn't believe in him. And what we are dealing here with is the story of a human situation which had gone beyond the point of remedy. Lazarus was dead. He'd been in the grave for 4 days. As far as the people were concerned, especially Martha and Mary, the worst had happened. Lazarus had died. And added to the grief of the two sisters were their perplexity and their hurt because Jesus hadn't come. Jesus hadn't responded to their appeal. They couldn't understand. As soon as they were aware of the fact that as Lazarus was so ill, there were indications he was going to die, with one accord, they said, "Let's send for Jesus." But he didn't come. And as the story makes plain, he deliberately didn't come. It wasn't that he was hindered. He deliberately stayed where he was for another 2 days. And so we're not surprised when we come to verse 39 of the story that Martha, the sister of the dead man, spoke her words. "Look, Lord, the situation is impossible. You can't open the grave now." But the moment I began to read this story and study it in preparation for preaching, I found myself thinking it. About Christmas, I did last week, remember speaking to the children. And I thought of the Christmas story and a bit in the Christmas story that we tend to forget. The angel said to Mary, "With God, nothing shall be impossible." And we forget that. And Martha and Mary forgot that with God, nothing is impossible. And when we are dealing with Jesus, we have to remember that we are dealing with God incarnate. People have sometimes said to me, and I've laughed, people have sometimes said to me, "Oh, Mr. Lip, I couldn't be a Christian like you." I tell them, "Oh, God forbid, be a better one." But you know what I mean? People say, oh, I couldn't be a Christian like you. With God, nothing shall be impossible. And if Jesus Christ can take Lazarus out of the grave and set him free in life and liberty, just think of what he can do with the likes of you and me. In some ways, the story is obvious. It scarcely needs preaching. I remind you that we have studied 6 of these signs that Jesus did. And we have seen in each of them, I think, Jesus' methods in dealing with situations and dealing with people and doing so in order to lead them to faith. So that as they believed, Jesus could then bring into their lives the powers and the possibilities that only he could bring. And we have to concentrate on the methods of Jesus here as well. And he deliberately delayed. He deliberately let the worst happen so that these people could be brought to faith. Of course, when you're in a very sore situation, and it seems that God is doing nothing, it is very easy to jump to conclusions. And that can lead not only to doubt, it can lead to self-pity and to bitterness. And I remind you of what happened after Jesus fed the 5,000, when everything seemed to be on the crest of a wave of success. Jesus sent the disciples away on their own. He didn't go with them. They got into their boat. It got dark. The Sea of Galilee was stormy. They were laboring at the oars. The hours were going by. Nothing was happening. They were making no progress. And sometimes it is only being led by Jesus into situations like that that will make us think clearly and begin to say to ourselves, now, what is God saying to me in this? And as we mentioned the other week, the disciples were in actual fact far safer in the dark, on their own, and struggling, far safer there than on the crest of a wave of success. And Jesus waited till the fourth watch of the night before he went to the disciples. Because, you see, they had to learn to trust. And we have exactly the same here. Jesus delayed. Verse 5, Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus so. Because he loved them, when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Oh, you say, Mr. Philip, I don't understand. But then you see, I often don't understand. I have to trust. It's poor language. But I know that Jesus will never do me down. I know that Jesus will never do me dirty. I know that Jesus will never do anything to demolish me or humiliate me. Oh, he may do things to humble me, but not to humiliate me. You see, he loves us far too much for that. And I remind you, some of you scarcely need reminding, that the family at Bethany had a special place in Jesus' heart and life. It was in the home of Martha and Mary and Lazarus that Jesus spent each night of Holy Week, the last week of his life before he went to Gethsemane and the cross. That home in Bethany, and these three people there, oh, they had a special place in Jesus' heart. We know quite a bit about Mary and about Martha, but there is very, very little that we know about Lazarus. He seems to have been a quiet, almost a negative kind of man, overshadowed by his sisters. There were the three unmarried folk in that house. And my, the two bosses were Martha and Mary. You hear very, very, very little about Lazarus. We do know that Jesus loved Lazarus. And the sisters knew that Jesus loved Lazarus. Maybe Martha and Mary didn't show the care for their brother that they should have done, but they knew that Jesus loved, and so when they sent the message, they said, Lazarus, whom you love, is ill. And I want us to notice that their appeal, the appeal that they made to Jesus, was not made on the ground of their love for Jesus, nor was it made on the ground of Lazarus' love for Jesus. Their prayer was made on the highest ground, Jesus' love for them. Didn't we sing last Sunday, was it last Sunday evening, the hymn that begins, Not what I am, O Lord, but what thou art. That alone can be, forget the words, thy love not mine, bids fear and doubt depart, and stills the tempest of my tossing breast. And when I'm up against it, I don't really say, oh Lord, I love you. I tend to say, Lord, you say that you love me, and that you will never go back on your love. We're trying to say that in our opening prayer, were we not? In spite of everything, he loves us still. Oh, love that wilt not let me go. Oh, love that seekest me through pain. Not love that seeks me in the middle of pain, but by the means of pain, love seeks to reach us and to lay hold upon us and to enfold us and to lift us and to bless us and to keep us. Oh, the love of God. Love beyond all thought and wonder. And so the appeal to Jesus, Lazarus, whom you love, is ill. They didn't prescribe anything, but they really said, do something. And Jesus heard their appeal. He stayed where he was for 2 more days. When Lazarus was dead, he came. He wept. He prayed. And he commanded. He didn't need the loud voice to make Lazarus hear. But there was a crowd. And he wanted the crowd to know the explanation of the miracle. And he cried with all, I'm not going to try to copy it. Lazarus, come forth. What would you have done if you'd been there? You'd have held your breath, so would I. You'd have watched. Lazarus came out. What would you have done? We'll leave that question unanswered. And Jesus said, loose him and let him go. Now, we mustn't speculate in this story about things that are not made clear. At the end of the story, Jesus said, unbind him and let him go. And off went Lazarus. No crowd of reporters with microphones and tape recorders trying to get a story. No spate of questions that could possibly make a headline. You know the kind of thing, sticking, how these wretched characters intrude upon human grief and human hurt. Merciless. And they stick their microphones under someone's nose and say, Lazarus, how did it feel when you were dying? Lazarus, what was it like after you were dead? Lazarus, what's it like? Where did you go? What did you hear? Did you hear him saying, come forth? Jesus simply refused to allow that to happen. Loose him and let him go, and Lazarus went away home. We are not going to speculate. The point of the story is simply this. That we have to see in it Jesus as the conqueror of death. Now you see, death is something we've all got to cope with. In our families, among our friends, and in our own lives. It's the surest thing. Now when Lazarus died, we see Martha and Mary both feeling sure that death had the last word. And they said, there's something sad, isn't it? Oh, they said, Jesus, if only you had been here, it wouldn't have happened. But they knew perfectly well earlier in Jesus' life and ministry that he had worked miracles without being there. The story of the nobleman's son, 22 miles or something away from where the lad was lying ill. And Jesus said to the father, "Go your way, your son's better." And in that very moment when Jesus spoke, the son was healed. Why did he say, "Oh, if only you had been here"? People tend to say that still. You know, if only we could see Jesus, if only we could see him right by our side, you know, if we could touch him or hold his hand and all that kind of thing, we would cope a lot better. We have to learn to believe when we cannot see. I remember answering a question in the English degree exam at Aberdeen University on the words of Alfred Lord Tennyson, "Believing where we cannot prove." This is what the story is all about. It's almost as if this morning Jesus is saying, do you not remember the last words I said to my disciples? "Lo, I am with you always." Do you believe it? "Oh," said Mary and Martha, "if only you had been here, it wouldn't have happened. But it did happen, and there was nothing that anyone could do." And we see the crowd of people, and they seem to have gone a little further than Martha and Mary. They say, well, the man who opened the eyes of the blind man, couldn't he have done the same and prevented this man from dying? They had caught glimpses of what Jesus could do. But no one here thought that death could be conquered. In the passage, verses 22 to 24, Martha said, "Even now I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you." Now, I've no idea what she meant. I'm not sure that she knew what she meant. And sometimes when I say my prayer, I'm not just quite sure what I mean God to do. "Even now I know that whatever you ask from God, God will give you." Jesus said, "Your brother will rise again." And Martha said, "Oh, well, you know, I'm an Orthodox believer, and I believe the resurrection at the last, and yes, my brother will rise." "Oh," says Jesus, that's not what I'm meaning. "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live, and whoever lives and believes in me shall never die." Do you believe this? And again, her answer is somewhat defective. "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, he who is coming into the world." "Yes," said Jesus, "but do you believe that I'm able to do this thing for you and for Mary and for Lazarus?" In verse 32, you find Mary exactly the same as her sister Martha. When she came where Jesus was and saw him, fell at his feet, saying, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." I can imagine Martha going back to say, "Mary, the Master's calling for you." And Mary said, "Well, what's he saying about it all?" I can imagine Martha said, "Well, you know, he said, I am the resurrection and the life. I'm not terribly sure what he meant." So off went Mary, and when she came to Jesus, she said, she didn't say, "Lord, what did you mean that bit about the resurrection and the life?" She said, "Lord, if you had been here, it wouldn't have happened." Sadness dominated. And neither Martha nor Mary thought that when Jesus said, "I am the resurrection and the life," he meant here and now. And I believe there are lots of people who are just like that. They don't realize that this same Jesus is here now to exercise his saving power now, to change our personalities and our circumstances now, and to deliver us from the fear of death now? I've told you before of a dear relative of mine, and we were talking on this occasion. I felt the conversation had gone on too long. It wasn't very productive, and I said rather casually, "Oh, I'll maybe be dead by then." And she said, "Oh, don't speak like that." I said, "Why not? It's true." And then I bore testimony to my faith, that I believe in Jesus, who said, "I am the resurrection and the life. He that believeth in me, though he were dead, yet shall he live. And whosoever liveth and believeth in me shall never die." I don't understand. I remember the late Dr. John Gray, a former moderator of the Assembly, being interviewed in television. He knew he was dying of cancer. He had sent a letter to all the young ministers who'd acted as his assistants in Dunblane Cathedral to tell them and to ask for their prayers. And he was being interviewed and being asked questions about what he believed about life after the... He said, "There's a lot that I don't understand. There's a lot that I don't understand. But I'm prepared to trust. I am the resurrection and the life. Not I will bring. Not at some time in the future I will give. But I am now. In my own person, right here beside you, I am the resurrection and the life." Oh, you say, "Preacher, what does it mean?" Well, resurrection speaks of life from the dead. Life in which the power and the dominion of sin and death are broken. You seem to be enjoying singing the hymn earlier in the service, number 125. "O sin, thou art vanquished, thy long reign is o'er. Though still thou dost vex us, we dread thee no more." And then the last verse, "Our foes are all conquered, Christ Jesus is King." It's great. And I believe it with all my heart. There's a lot I don't understand. I've got it written somewhere in my notes, but I can't read my own writing sometimes, what it says in the shorter catechism. That the souls of believers are at their death made perfect in holiness, and do immediately pass into glory. Their bodies rest in the grave until the resurrection. Not altogether sure what that means. And not altogether sure what it means or how it will all work out when I die. But I believe. I believe that there is no doubt at all that I will be with Jesus. So whether heaven's up there or out there or wherever it is, there's a man there already with a resurrection body, recognizable by the print of the nails in his hands. And because I die believing in him, wherever he is, I will be. And that's good enough for me. I suppose, well, I would like to think that when the time comes, some of you at least will be a bit sad to see me go. But don't you forget, I won't be sad. Not a bit. Oh, I can't refrain from telling you again the story of D.L. Moody. Preaching on the resurrection, he said, "One of these days, my friends, you'll see it in the newspapers, D.L. Moody is dead." "Don't you believe it," he said. "D.L. Moody will be far more alive that day than he's ever been before." And so I believe. Resurrection. Life from the dead. Now. Life in which the power and dominion of sin and death are broken. Life that is set free from circumstances. Life that is set free from heredity. Life that is set free from past sins and past failures. Life that is increasingly set free from all the inhibitions of our personalities. Life that is eternal. Eternal in quality, not just in duration. Life that is set free from fear and uncertainty. life in which you begin to discover the length and the breadth and the depth and the height of the love of God in Jesus Christ. Many people live and grow old, marked by fear and by longing. It sort of crowds in on them. But Jesus spoke and said to Lazarus, who had died and who had lain in the tomb, "Lazarus, come out of that prison house. You're not going to live like that anymore." And Lazarus came out, and he was set free to live. Jesus said, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die." Do you believe this, my dear people? Everything in me says, "Yes, Lord, I believe it." As I pointed out to the children, there's this lovely bit in the story when Martha begins at verse 28. Martha went and called her sister. I think Martha was just beginning to believe, maybe feeling that it was too good to be true. But Martha went and said, "Mary, the Master is calling you. Mary, the Master wants you to come." Now, your name may not be Mary, but if there's one thing I'm sure of, it's this: that the Master, whose name is Jesus, speaks your name and says, "Come." But oh, how sad when Jesus wept. And he said, "How often would I have gathered you, and you would not." Amen, and may God bless to us the speaking and the preaching of his word.